Clark, and you are listening to Radio Lifestyle. We are back with another of our coronavirus interviews, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Neil Tetley, who is the principal of the prestigious Hastings School here in Madrid. Neil, thank you so much for finding the time to come on the programme.
No, thank you, Abby, for inviting me.
So, Neil, you are the principal of Hastings School. When did you take on the role?
I've nearly finished my second year. Started in September 2018.
Mm-hmm. And where were you working before? Were you here in Spain or were you back home? Or
no, I was back in the UK. I was actually head of a school called Woodbridge School in Suffolk.
Mm-hmm.
But have been all over. Spent a lot of my career in London. Lived in Brussels for a little bit. Taught English in Japan and Italy for a bit as well. So moved around a lot.
Yeah, very international, well-travelled.
Indeed.
So how are you finding Madrid?
I really like it. Yeah, I mean, obviously the last few months would have been a strange experience anywhere. But yeah, I think Madrid's got a really nice balance as a city. I mean, I think from moving around, what I've learned is that I like living in cities. In cities, in my family, we enjoy being in cities because of all the sort of variety they offer.
Yes.
London is great. I love London, but it is massive and difficult. Whereas Rome, which was great, was very chaotic. And I think Madrid works well as a city. Weather's nice. People are nice. Food's great. So yeah, I think it's got a really good balance of everything.
So I am very interested in our listeners knowing more about your new project, the Hastings School Nexus. I've been reading a little about it just recently. It's an innovative project to especially help the young students, right, between 14 and 18 years of age, I understand. I wonder if you can tell us a little more about that.
Sure. The idea is it's a concept of education that seeks to ensure that age group, that the experience for those students acts as a real bridge between school and university and life beyond that. So that it's not just the same old school, but they're slightly older.
Okay.
And what that means in reality, I mean, we've been very fortunate in that we have a lovely new building for these 14 to 18 year olds, which is not really, it doesn't feel like a normal school building. It's very modern. It's more got a sort of Google Office vibe.
Sounds great.
It's a really lovely environment to learn. And it's got areas for them to collaborate. And it's got an area where they can do public speaking. And it's got a lot of technology. But I suppose the key is around the way that we try to teach in order to develop that independence, that problem solving, all those sort of broader skills and attributes, the collaborative skills, their ability to work, you know, to empathize, creativity. So we're trying to build an educational experience that helps young people to develop, get good exam grades, because clearly that's very important, go off to good universities, but also develop all those sort of broader attributes that they will need.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Sounds really good. And I think these things are extremely important, and they are subjects which people tend to forget about, because I think they, you know, many schools get so sort of obsessed with the obvious of getting good grades, as you say. But there's so much more to education than that, you know. And you need to prepare the children for the future, for the real world out there. And it's not just about getting straight A's and everything else. So it sounds very interesting.
I think particularly will be more and more important, because it's likely that automation means that jobs that can be automated will be. So those distinctly human qualities, the ability to think originally and creatively, to be empathetic and so on, are vitally important. Exam grades are not enough.
No, yeah, I absolutely agree. I really do. It sounds wonderful, this new project. Wait, when did it begin?
Well, we opened the building this year, but there is actually a Hastings Nexus at the British School of Barcelona.
Okay.
Sorry, a Nexus at the British School of Barcelona. And so, yeah, I suppose the concept has been in development for a few years.
I see. Oh, that's great. I understand that Hastings is the flagship school of the international school group Cognita. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure flagship. I mean, within Cognita, there's different types of schools, and we're all equally important.
Okay.
There's also the fact that there's similar schools to ours, and particularly the British School of Barcelona, I suppose, is similar in size and being reasonably high profile.
Okay.
I think it is true that, yeah, we're one of the bigger, more high profile schools within Cognita. And I suppose that's the reason, you know, why we've had such significant investment recently.
Okay, I understand. That's great. Now, coming to the whole coronavirus situation, what were your first thoughts upon receiving the news that that it had turned into a pandemic and that schools had to close? What strategy did you put into place at the start of the lockdown with online schooling from home, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty that was quite a crazy period. I mean, I think we had the advantage in that for a few years, we have been working quite a lot on digital learning, not thinking we'd have to close down completely, but, you know, incorporating it into the classroom. We do actually have a couple of people employed as tech coaches who are, their job is to help teachers use technology, because that's actually the biggest problem.
Absolutely.
You know, you can spend a fortune on computers, but if teachers don't use them, then it's a waste of money.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And they do need to be taught. I mean, you know, it's not easy. You can't just pick up whatever and understand it straight away. It is something that is complex. So I think it's fantastic. Yeah. And these people you already had on site, obviously, before this pandemic broke out, I imagine.
Yeah. So we'd employed them already, and they'd been doing work. I wouldn't say we were the finished article in terms of our competence and confidence. But I think generally speaking, we had a pretty good base on which to build in terms of the hardware and the teacher confidence in order to use it.
Yeah.
We also had a bit of an advantage in that, as you say, we're part of Cognita. The schools in Asia had closed 3 weeks before us.
Yes.
And we'd been able to learn a lot from them in terms of the planning. But yeah, when I think we thought we had more time, it was very sudden. And so those couple of days were really, really intense getting ready for it. But then on, I think it was the 12th of March, we did successfully manage to launch all of our online learning provision.
Wow, fantastic.
And basically the older students, the younger ones it's harder, but for the older ones, they have a normal school day. So they have six lessons. They start at the beginning of each lesson with the teacher who explains whatever they're going to be doing. Then they work alone, sometimes they work in groups or as a whole class. But at the end of each lesson, they have to submit some kind of evidence that they've done what they were supposed to do.
Brilliant.
So we've taken quite a structured approach, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I think it helps the students so much. I mean, structure is something, you know, routine is something that's very important for young people anyway. So I think sort of to help them, you know, to have adapted to this strange situation we're living, I'm sure that was of huge importance to them. Having that structure, okay, fine, we're not going to school, but at least here at home we've got some form of structure to our day. We're continuing with our routine to a certain point. So I think that's fantastic and very organized, having that all up and running by the 12th, because your last day of school, I assume, was the 10th, as was everyone's, I think, here in...
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we have one day. I think did we announce on the 10th, and then the 11th we had a day to prepare, and then the 12th. Yeah, so we were, but I said we had actually done a lot of the planning.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate to be in the position that we were.
Yes, definitely.
compared, I think, to most schools.
Yeah, that's great. So, Neil, I know that at your school you put great importance into new technologies, especially with your computer science subject, which is obviously vital in today's world, and even more so with the students having to currently study from home. Can you tell us more about the computer science project?
Yeah, sure. So that is really the idea that students should understand how computers are programmed and coding. And I think there's two elements to it. One is that it should be a basic literacy for all, because it's so vital to so many aspects of our day-to-day existence that we should, as citizens, have some understanding of how computers are programmed. So basically all students up to year 10, which is sort of our 14, 15-year-olds, will have a compulsory lesson in coding.
Oh, fantastic.
But then for those, the second strand of it, for those who are most passionate and want to take it to a higher level, we offer IGCSE computer studies, computer science, which is an exam they take at 16. And we offer A-level computer science, which is an exam they take at 18. So they can, for some of them, I mean, it's a really, really tough discipline. They can take it to a very high level.
Fantastic. I mean, I imagine that would be more for the students who are, as you say, so passionate about it that they're seriously thinking about going into that in their career. So it would be more sort of really specialising, I imagine, in that. But, you know, even if they don't take it to that level, as you say, it's so important that people understand, you know, the technology, they know how to manage it, they know how to use it correctly, because it is the world of today and the world of tomorrow. So it's a very important subject. I wish I'd had more of that in school.
No, me too. I need to understand it.
We're having to do crash courses now, aren't we? So.
Yeah. It's true. There's a lot to learn.
There is.
We use this kind of technology without any real base understanding of what happens in order to make it work. So, yeah, I think it is important for our students to get that grounding.
Definitely. Yeah, that's great. Really great. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about was with the coronavirus, obviously, we've had to depend so much on these new technologies, and we're seeing how children are so much more motivated to study when they get to use programs online, such as I say Snapit or Live Worksheets, because actually those are the ones my children are using. But how do you balance tablet learning with the traditional learning from books?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question and a big question. Personally, I think as a school, we have to decide first what we want to achieve educationally. Mm-hmm. And as I was saying before, you know, for us, that's around balancing excellent academic grades while developing these broader skills, characteristics, whatever you want to call them. And then I think we ask ourselves, okay, how can this best be done? And digital technology may be the best way of doing something. You mentioned Snapit. I mean, we use a different system called Century Tech, but works in similar ways of personalizing questions, you know, using adaptive technology to make sure the level of difficulty is appropriate for that student.
Okay.
And that's amazing. But I think equally often it's most effective not to use computers. And I think also the novelty value does wear off quite quickly. And we mustn't forget that so much of the educational experience is a human one.
Yes.
So in between teachers and students, a teacher really earning the trust of that student, getting to know them, students developing relationships with other students. So I think we have to be careful that technology doesn't get in the way of that. Sometimes kinesthetic activities are better, you know, actually having physical things to move around is better, or actually physical textbooks are, most people prefer using those still to e-books. So I think it's a balanced approach, but it's around starting with your educational philosophy and then thinking what is the best sort of tool in order to help you achieve what you want to achieve.
It's Because I mean, with new technologies, that's the thing that does worry me with my children. They're on their tablet, and you know, it is a very individual way of working. You know, I do prefer, for example, I love the classes they have online because they're interacting. You know, their friends are there. Okay, albeit on a screen, but it's better than nothing. And it is so important that they don't become sort of too sort of isolated when it comes to studying. So it sounds like you have the perfect balance, which is great.
Hopefully, once we can get back into school.
Yes. Yeah, let's see. So from a business point of view, the coronavirus has opened up a new world of technologies and questions about which way to go, to stay more in the traditional or, for example, with working from home telematically. And we've seen how easy it is to set up many companies working from home. It all happened very quickly. You know, all these companies just suddenly they popped up, you know, everyone working from their homes. And but what are your thoughts on that, on the future of that as well?
Yeah, I suppose a big topic that's being written a lot about is what will be the lasting changes from this, or will we go back to normal? I think in terms of working, I think it will have a long-term difference, less so on school environments, but I think in terms of businesses, I mean, friends that I speak to, lots of whom work in the city, say that their companies are all planning to reduce hugely expensive office space. I think it makes sense. You know, I think before there was a bit of a distrust of working at home. It was seen as an opportunity to maybe not do the work properly or, you know, to have an easy day. But I think it's shown that it doesn't work like that. And in it can be more efficient. You know, it can lead to a better work-life balance. So, yeah, some kind of mixed approach, I think, will be the norm moving forward.
Yes, I can see that working. And I think you're right, it didn't happen before because of that distrust. And I guess, you know, now they've seen, okay, well, our company's working pretty well and we've got all these people working from home. Well, you know, it can't be a bad thing. And as you say, I think if people are happier, they're always going to be more efficient in their work. So, you know, as you say, if they're able to have that balance, they're not, you know, going off in the car every morning with these horrible commutes and spending hours in traffic jams and goodness knows what else, you know, they're going to be happier from that point of view as well. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very
benefits. And,
yeah, definitely. So I was interested in asking you about one subject to do with insurance, more because I've been reading about this one school in the UK that had basically they've gone it alone, as it were, and bringing in more people, but they are not insured by the government, and the other schools that are following the guidelines are insured, should there be any problems. How does that work here in Spain?
Well, the honest answer is I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay.
In terms of us, we wouldn't do that. I mean, we wouldn't sort of go it alone and break the rules, and probably we wouldn't be insured if we did. So I think it's very, very difficult for schools to do that. Really.
Yeah, I wonder why they have. I'll read more about it, but it seems strange.
I mean,
to
I
take
think
that risk.
A temptation if you feel the rules are not sensible, but ultimately we just have to follow them. You know, I don't think we've got any choice, and I suppose we have to trust that governments have access to a great deal more of the evidence than we do, and you know, these decisions have a rationale.
Yes, yeah, no, that's very true. I think I definitely would take the more sensible route. I just found it rather curious when I was reading about that, just to sort of see, you know, what the situation here in Spain. But and the other thing I wanted to talk about is I know that, you know, you put a lot of importance into the students' personal growth, motivation, which we've touched on a little bit already in this interview, but also to be open-minded in their way of thinking. We could say that this is a generation of the easy life, and now that the coronavirus has entered our lives, what difficulties have the students had dealing with the situation, and how can you help them return to the, albeit the new normal, as we're all calling it, but while still having learned something from the experience, for example, valuing what they have, valuing their freedom, and, you know, understanding that they are not indestructible. I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that, sort of helping them with that.
Yeah, it's, again, interesting points. I suppose different layers to that question.
Yes.
I I don't. Well, in terms of whether their generation easy life, as you say, we're probably finding ways in which they are and they aren't.
Yes.
I actually think with the 2008 crisis and now this is a generation that have had it fairly tough and are going to have it fairly tough when it comes to job prospects.
Yes.
And I think we have a bit of a tendency as human beings to sort of romanticize previous generations and slightly demonize current ones. I think the current generation are great. I think they're actually harder working, more tolerant, more respectful than certainly when I was at school, used to be the case. So I think the current generation are, I find in terms of the way they act, we could find many positives. In terms of coping, generally they have adapted amazingly well. I mean, in terms of lessons, as I said, we had this fairly structured day. We followed anyone up who was not engaging, which is very few, to try and understand why and to get them back into the engagement. I
Great.
think they also have the advantage of socially, they are used to connecting with their friends
Yes.
using digital means.
Because within the school before the crisis, before the pandemic, were you sort of were they working very much in that way? Sort of obviously with the new technologies, is that why you feel that they've adapted very quickly and easily to studying in that way?
They weren't much actually. It was certainly not with the same intensity.
No.
They're pretty adaptable. Young people are pretty adaptable, and there's a new situation, and they'll just tend to work with it. And obviously, there were some teething problems. There have been certain people who've struggled with it. There have been certain people who felt a bit lonely and isolated, and we've had to put in place special support for them. I think actually the novelty has well and truly worn off now, and they're all becoming a little bit fed up with it. But yeah, they've coped really well, better than I could possibly have expected.
That's fantastic, really good news. But I think again, the sort of the structure really does help, doesn't it? Sort of, even though they're not able to come into school, at least they've still got the structure of their Monday to Friday, and I think it does help a lot, to not
Yeah.
sort of feel too lost, especially at the beginning of all of this, when all of a sudden
Yeah.
you're at home and school's not, you're not going to school, you're not doing your normal routine, and so that would have helped a lot, I understand.
Sorry, just on that part, I think it would be very, very hard for young people. If you're given, it's very hard for adults. If you're given just a lot of work to do and told by the end of the week you have to do it,
Yes.
it's really difficult. So I think, yeah, it's easier for them if the day is structured.
Sort of how many online classes directly with the teacher are they having a day? For example, the younger lot, perhaps up to sort of 14, and how much of that is them actually sort of sitting at their desk and making sure sort of they finish English studies in that day or whatever it may be? How are you structuring that sort of from a teacher point of view?
So the 11 to 14-year-olds would have six online live lessons a day,
Wow, that's fantastic.
but it's not necessarily the whole lesson is live because that isn't very efficient if you've got 18 kids
Yes.
on a call. But they'll always start together as a group, and I think it's very nice just to see their faces, hear their teacher's voice, and that kind of thing. Then during the lesson, it varies. I mean, what actually has been more and more effective is you can set up small groups using these platforms. We use Teams. So you can put your class into groups of four, say, and the teacher can then go into different groups and hear what they're discussing. Because one of the challenges is having a class discussion of 18, it doesn't work online.
No.
In the way that it does in a classroom. So yeah, that and then younger, it varies. They apart from the very tiny ones, the 3-year-olds, they most of them have at least two live lessons a day and upwards.
It sounds really well structured. So the subject of bullying is something I wanted to touch on with you, to hear your opinions, because you know, with the new technologies and the social networks that you know my children and they are all growing up with today, which is so much a part of their lives. Obviously, there is a huge danger of bullying in social networks. How in your school do you help the children to grow with good ethics, good values, good education, and to teach them limits with the use of the networks?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big challenge. It's a bit,
yes.
I mean, I think there's two, the first really is bullying as a whole, because social media bullying is a subset of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we have to get our approach to that right, first of all. And I do think, other than incredibly serious things, I do think it is the most serious thing that can happen in school, actually,
yes.
Because it's utterly corrosive and very, very damaging to the person on the receiving end of it. So what do we do? Well, I think we need young people to understand the dynamic of bullying. So bullying nearly always comes from weakness and insecurity.
Yes.
So that young people need to look at, to see a bully as someone who is weak and needs help rather than someone who is strong. And that mindset change actually is really important. We need to create a culture in which it's not acceptable. So a lot of talking about it in PSHE, personal social health education, mm-hmm. In assemblies. We actually do a survey every year called the Wellbeing Survey. And students get asked, get given a number of statements, and they have to answer yes, no, unsure.
Okay.
So one of the statements is, my school deals quickly with bullying. And so it allows us to sort of monitor the level of it, if you know what I mean.
Yes, that's great.
And see, are we making progress? So this year, I mean, obviously we want it to be zero, but this year 3.5% said no, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it can be better, but shows it's not a culture rife with bullying.
Yeah. Definitely. And is this questionnaire that you do once a year, do you do it for the very young as well? From what age group upwards do they actually have to do it?
We do it from year three upwards, about seven-year-olds.
Seven-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. No, that's great.
Below that, it's difficult.
Yes, of course, they're very young.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, on bullying more, I mean, you have to make sure, it's going to be quite a long answer. I don't know where you want me to
No, that's fine. No, you go ahead. It's a subject which is so important and is a concern of so many people that I felt it was important to ask you about this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the you've got your general culture, but it will happen. And then you need to pick it up quickly and actually, you know, sort of studies have shown it's the bystanders are critical, because the person being bullied may well not come forward, but it's the ones that are the kids that are seeing it happening who have to come forward and tell you.
Yes. Yeah. And not feel afraid to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, and feel they can come and tell us anonymously.
Yes.
And we will then take it forward. And then you've got to deal with it strongly. And I think, you know, that is initially partly supporting the bully in changing their behavior. But if it happens, if the same person or people are doing it repeatedly, you know, they have to leave the school, because it's just not acceptable to allow it to happen.
That's for sure. That's great. It sounds like you're really, you know, handling it well, because it is a concern for so many people that I think it's, you know, something that needs to be addressed in a very serious way. So you're definitely on top of it, which is good to hear.
Yeah, I definitely answered your point about social media, though. But anyway, I mean, many of the same rules apply, I think. And
yes.
Also not letting children too young on social media networks. I think a big element of this whole thing is parent cooperation.
Yes. You're obviously concerned about your pupils and the staff, because obviously none of us knows what could happen. But the children really do need to eventually get back, obviously, to some normality, see their friends, get back to the daily routine, you know, not just from home, but obviously in the school environment, which is obviously so important for them. What are your feelings on that? When, you know, when will they go back? With September, possibly? Sort of what are your thoughts on all that?
I completely agree. They do need to get back to as near normality as possible. Mm. You know, I hope not, but we may well be living with this virus for the whole of next academic year.
Yes, possibly.
And we have to take sensible precautions around cleaning and hand washing and trying to reduce big groups and things. But we have to get back to as near normality as we can, and I think we've got to be realistic. You know, people are talking about 2 meter distancing, and that's all very well in the short term, maybe. You know, if a little bit of time before the summer, but we can't keep children 2 meters apart for a whole year.
No,
it's not realistic. So we need to find a realistic balance that allows education to continue as normally as possible,
yes,
while minimizing risk.
Hmm. Have any of your students gone back at all to school, or is everyone working from home online or studying from home online currently?
Yeah, everyone's still studying online at home. Yeah, the guidance from government has been a little bit unclear.
Yes.
We thought we might be able to get some of our youngest ones back, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So, yeah, at the moment, we have no students back at school, sadly.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really looking like September time, I imagine. And then I guess it will be a case of looking at the structure, as you see, of how you do it with the 2 meters, with, you know, social distancing. So it'll just be a sort of trial and error, I think, to start off with, see how we're all going to handle it. But step by step, we'll get there.
Indeed. I mean, I hope it's not 2 meters by then, because...
Possibly not. Mm.
We can, well, also we can socially distance them in the classroom.
Yes, yeah.
Potentially, I mean, if you've got a big enough classrooms, which varies, but as soon as they're out of the classroom, they're not going to be 2 meters apart from each other. So
no.
I think we have to. I hope the government guidance that we get in the end is realistic and sensible.
Yes, hopefully. I'm sure it will be, because, I mean, you know, they're not stupid from the point of view that obviously some things are physically impossible to carry out. And it's not easy. I mean, what do you do, especially with the infants, you know, ages? I mean, they're, you know, you can't expect these little sort of 4 or 5 year olds to understand social distancing, you know. That's pretty complicated stuff.
You could do a lot of damage trying to shout at them and tell them.
Yes.
You could really upset them by telling them they have to keep apart.
Definitely.
But even 17, 18 year olds, they're never going to sit 2 meters apart from each other when they're socializing.
I mean, no.
Not going to happen.
No, it's impossible. So, no, I think they will end up being sort of realistic with their guidelines and or their rules, you know, come September. I think it's just pure logic, really, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, fingers crossed.
Yes, yeah. So I wanted to ask you, you know, on a more personal note, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about your school, but how's the lockdown been for you personally? And, you know, have your friends and family all been okay? I hope none of them have fallen ill with the virus.
No, thankfully, no. I mean, the odd friend has said they might have had it, but no one's been seriously ill, thank goodness.
Good.
So, no, thank you very much. We've been okay as a family. I mean, we perhaps made the, with the benefit of hindsight, mistaken decision to live really centrally in Madrid in a smallish apartment with no balcony. Yeah, so I think if you'd said to me 3 months ago, we are all going to be in this apartment all basically all the time,
yes,
I'd have thought, you know, that's going to be impossible. We're all going to kill each other. But we've managed. Yeah, it's been okay.
That's,
I mean,
great.
We've done Zoom calls with friends and family, and we've done inside exercise routines.
Oh,
boys I mean, I probably shouldn't say this, but the PlayStations have been a godsend for my two teenage boys, and
Oh,
the
yes.
ability to connect with their friends has been really, in terms of keeping their morale high, has been very
Definitely.
important.
Well, for that age group, it is vitally important that they've got that connection with their friends. Otherwise, I'm sure they would have suffered a lot more. Great. I'm a fan of PlayStations when it comes to that, definitely. I think the benefits definitely outweigh the disadvantages of it. But
Once they've done their homework, of course.
yes, absolutely. It sounds like you've got it all under control.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I hope we don't have to do it again, but it's been okay.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. Okay, well, that's all we've got time for today. But thank you so much, Neil, for coming on the program and telling us, informing us about so many interesting subjects. And it's been really, really great to interview you. Thank you.
No, thank you again for inviting me. My pleasure.